Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload something once a week, once every other week, get you that kickboxing fix. Also, the most efficient way to get the kickboxing podcast is to go to iTunes, enter Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter Lord Gaul, L-O-R-D-G-A-U-L, which was my username when I fell in love with the sport back in the fight forum days of Cockatoo-Gi, K1 fans, K1 USA, and so on. First let me throw the Twitter handle at you guys, /StephenTheWarman, one word. I'm going to go ahead and do what I promised. I'm going to give you guys that glory breakdown. This is the only card I'm going to talk about for today. I did a lot of cards last week in terms of a lot of results, broke things down and so on, but I'm excited to get back to you guys and get you more kickboxing news and really break down this card. I'm pretty excited about it. For the second consecutive card in a row, I feel for the most part as I look at this card that it reflects the best talent in the world. I think there are a few names in here where I was like, I'm not so sure, but I still think that they are solid, legit, top 50-ish guys in the world around their weight classes. One guy still a little bit on the debatable side for me, but I definitely look at this card and I say top to bottom, this reflects the glory product. This reflects the product that should be the best kickboxing product in the world. So as I look down the card and I break things down in particular, first of all, the big excitement, the biggest news, of course, is the fact that they're going to Amsterdam. Like, that is big news to have a big kickboxing event in Amsterdam. It's been, I cannot think of, sorry, there might have been a slight glitch there. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but sorry, back to my point. I cannot think of the kickboxing sport as I know it, as I love it, without fighters from Amsterdam, not just fighters from Amsterdam, Holland, but also fighting events from Holland. The two biggest K1 events that I've seen, of course, I went to the K1 World Grand Prix in Japan, but then the other biggest event that I experienced, and it was one of my favorite events, is I got to see the K1 European Grand Prix, also combined with its Showtime card. And on that card, it had so many fights. Errol Zimmerman won the heavyweight tournament. Remy Bonjasky defeated Melvin Menhoff on that card. And then also you had Georgia Petrosian. He fought on the undercard. It's my first opportunity to get to see him. Nicky Holtzkin won by spinning back heel kick over Yuri Mess. It just was one of the most awesome cards that I've ever been a part of, and it was really long, and it was at the Amsterdam Arena, and you know, it was made a big deal of, because you know, K1 coming, it was the ideal card. You know, Shahid El-Haj was one of the fighters on that card. Drago Gago, I closed the night out, and he actually was upset in the last fight in the card, despite his really good intros. It's special, it's a special place to have kickboxing events. And of course they had the political situations where they had a mayor who kind of went on this, part of his, I guess this campaign, if you will, of going after kickboxing, saying that the people who watch kickboxing were all drug dealers and bad people and so on. And hey, I am not in any way, shape or form saying that there is inaccuracy in saying that some of the people that are drawn to kickboxing, there's some shady people in there. You know, we've had some deaths over the past couple of years of people who were known to have double lifestyles, to be trainers and representing, people in the gym one day, but definitely, selling drugs and having a different lifestyle outside of it. That's no question about it, that there is some truth to that. But there's also truth to these same individuals loving, football or soccer. Like, there's the same draw to them liking sports. So to suggest that getting rid of the sport and then getting rid of it out of Amsterdam keeps certain people out of Amsterdam as a positive is just strange to me. You know, when I was doing the documentary, one of the guys who did the interview, he's talking about how they want to keep everything that's bad in Holland in Amsterdam. So prostitution is not legal in the country of Holland. It's legal in the city of Amsterdam, so they keep that kind of there. And your drug use is usually done in coffee shops and so on in the Amsterdam area. They're trying to keep everything in that one area, but I think there's something about the culture of so many elite gyms, and I've said this on this podcast before for those who've heard me over the years, if you only knew how close Majiro Gym and Vosh Gym are to each other, and Chikurigi, they're really, really close to each other. Like, you could walk to all of them within, like, 20 minutes. You could walk to all three gyms. They are very, very close to each other. But there's a community of people who came from the, you know, the suburb areas, if you will, or the outer, the north, or from the south of Holland, and they made their way to the city because they wanted to go compete and train with all their heroes. They wanted to, Peter Arts and Remy Bonjowski, they wanted to go and train at the gyms where a lot of these elite guys trained at. They went, trained, competed all over the world, and then they went back home and they started to open up their own gyms. So in a way, it was like all of a sudden the kickboxing sport was bringing the negative environments that only existed into the city out to the suburbs, because they're bringing kickboxing out to the suburbs. So one thing that they are doing maybe to discourage people from wanting to come to Amsterdam and Holland to train, maybe one of the things that, maybe one of the tactics they were thinking of, not to mention that there's interest in some of the boxing community there with these political, there's those kind of ties, but I look at where they are now, and I look at, you know, that push that they had for a very long time of, we're going to keep this out of the city of Amsterdam, and if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in the outstretch. There's really no regulation. It's all run by the UMC and the world title organizers that they have there, all the judging. Kickboxing pretty much runs itself. So we can see how there can be people wondering, why no commission, why, regulatory body, why is this not in the sport? But the guy who pushed it out didn't make those arguments for long. He just said, it brings a certain type of people. And as you can imagine, it birthed a certain sort of prejudice. And I remember when I was out there filming the documentary and I was driving with this guy, and the guy says, I just got through finishing at Mike's gym and I got some interviews. And one of the guys that I'm riding back with, he was helping with another filming project. And he says, the problem with Holland is all the Moroccans. The Moroccans make up like 90% of the crime in the country. And when I heard that, and I was like, this is how that prejudice is kind of created. You know what I'm saying? It's like somebody went on a tangent saying there's a certain type of people who bring a certain type of lifestyle to kickboxing, and that's why I don't want kickboxing around. And then all of a sudden you run with that in the news, and it starts to sit into people's hearts, and they start to think certain ways. So then this gentleman came out with the comment of, and who knows what he's seeing in the news every day, but when he made that comment, he didn't even think it was a racist comment. He just thought that it was okay to say that Moroccans make up the majority of the crime, to the tune of 90% of the crime in all of the country. And I was like, man, that is a exceptionally high number. Like, it didn't sound like something that someone said. Sat down and maybe if I were to go to a prison in Holland, if I see 90% of them are all from Morocco, then I might think the guy's onto something. But at the same time, if he has this heart, do the people who are working as police officers, do they start to think if you're Moroccan, you're up to no good, and so on? So I look at this culture that was created of negativity around when they removed kickboxing out, and this is all the stories that I'm giving you. These are all things that I picked up training in Holland, doing my documentary. This is the heart of what people were going through. And they were like, it's a sport they love, and I'm watching people turn their lives around. Lucien Corbin talks about it. He says, hey, it'll help you to become disciplined. It'll turn you into a different person. He really loved what this sport did. So when the biggest city in Holland that produces all these world-class kickboxers doesn't have kickboxing events, it's sad for the sport. It brings everything down. And to hear that glory was returning to Amsterdam, and it's not like they are at, they're not at the Amsterdam Arena. I believe they are at the Amsterdam Rye Convention Center. I'm not 100% on that. I believe that's where they are. But the fact that there was a commitment by the glory team, of course, there's some with ties to, kickboxing, and some who were part of, K1 when it had all the fights in Holland. It seems to me that there was an effort made to say, all right, now that we're changing things up, now that we no longer have Spike TV as our partner, as we return to the European market, let's go to places where kickboxing is big. We got to bring kickboxing back to Amsterdam, and it seems like they've done that. So I'm really excited about this card on Friday, and I'm really excited that these athletes are going to get the opportunity to show their skill set. It's so crazy that it took this long for it to happen, and it's crazy that I remember, you know, even interviewing Simon Roots, and we're talking 2011, and him saying that he's given up on trying to defend kickboxing because he says the people who have made up their mind on it. They're not going to want this sport in. They're not looking at it rationally. They've made their mind up on the people who participate in it, the people who watch it, and he seemed like he kind of washed his hands of it. But now that Glory's moved around, got some international recognition, the thing that helped K1 go to Amsterdam in the first place was K1's got this international recognition. That's why Ernesto Hoos is considered almost a knight, if you will, highly represented or a highly respected person in the Holland community because of what he did over in Japan. Like, he brought international recognition through his, you know, his acts or through his work in the kickboxing world. So when that element was removed and now it is returned, you know, despite the fact that, you know, there's a period of time where the Simon Roots and the promoters like, this is going to be really tough to happen. It's back. Kickboxing is back in the biggest kickboxing community, and I'd say in the world. Not to say that other people aren't into kickboxing and aren't doing well, but I think that there were kids in Holland who grew up thinking, one day I'm going to be Ernesto Hoos, one day I'm going to be Peter Arts, and it produced a type of athlete. You know, the kids who wanted to be Raymond Dekkers one day. Like, that's all very, very important. And here we are talking about a Glory card, and I'm just so excited that big-time kickboxing has returned to Amsterdam. Go ahead and get it started with the first fight in the card. To add to further joy from me, a guy who I've been pumping on this show and on kickboxing forums for a really long time. I've been following him since he was like 16 years old. Aziz Kala. Aziz Kala. It's so crazy that once upon a time, he had a fight with Alim Nabaev. And Alim got the victory. Slicker, you know, slicker in that fight. Better movement. Took place in Russia. Aziz Kala had some moments, but definitely Alim Nabaev's night. But those guys, I'm like, these guys, we got a fight on a main card between a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old. This is the future of the sport. Aziz Kala, after following him for all this time, these 5 years, you know, that I've been really kind of focusing on his career, he makes his Glory debut. He gets to go against a very tough fighter in Pervez Abdulayev. And let me tell you something about Abdulayev. Abdulayev has got a resume of, he's kind of in the new style of the Russian fighters who play with the spinning technique, spinning back fists, spinning heel kicks. His most notable win would be against Rashid Balani, who's an old guy. It looked like he was brought in to fight without training at all. His body looked the worst I'd ever seen when Rashid Balani had gone in there. And again, he's an older guy. It was maybe an opportunity for him to make some money, but he was defeated by a really slick spinning back fist by Abdulayev. But Abdulayev is going to bring the fight. He's going to have pressure. I will say this in advance. Because of his style and because of Aziz Kala's style, there's a really good chance that this fight's on the uglier end. Some holds, some clinches that you might not want. Abdulayev is going to keep throwing spinning stuff, spinning back kicks in particular. He's going to look for a combination of the kicks and space. But really, because he moves forward so much, there's going to be a big chance because of Aziz Kala, who's going to throw heat. He moves forward, and Aziz Kala has a weird style about things. Because of Abdulayev's height, I can picture Aziz Kala getting a big knee, a big step-up knee, because he leaves himself open for that stuff when he's just throwing his big shots. But this is the biggest step up for him. Aziz Kala has gone against better guys. In fact, I think some of the guys in the Infusion roster are very solid guys who've given, you know, who Kala has beaten and lost to a couple of guys. I really, truly believe that this is a good fight. I've got Aziz Kala winning. There's going to be some bias in this, I'm going to admit, but that crush, that style. Clearly, if you were to look at it, you're like, I can definitely see Abdulayev outpointing Aziz Kala over 3 rounds. But because he's a smaller guy, I can see him having trouble with the knees. I can see a down happening to him in this fight. But I do think that it's going to be a gritty, grinding kind of fight. I don't think that it's going to be in space as much. If a point was taken, I wouldn't be surprised, but we will see. I got Aziz Kala winning the lightweight bout to start the card. Next fight I'm going to talk about is Johan Kangulo as he goes against Petr Karapetyan. over the last 5 years, no one's done better for themselves than Kerpet Karapetyan. What I mean by that is he was known to me as a guy who was tough, that was always going to put up good effort, but he's going to lose putting up good effort. And, you know, he had a decent effort, but lost against Joe Schilling. Joe Schilling's much bigger than him. It's a bigger weight class than he normally fights in. But Joe Schilling, you know, pretty much, you know, dominated that fight 4 or 5 rounds. He had Nicky Holtzkin fights much, you know, further before he got on to the Glory roster. He fought him back in the past. He fought him again here. Nicky Holtzkin, of course, has got a couple of victories over him. And the most recent victory when they met in the Tokyo Glory 13, Nicky Holtzkin got a KO stoppage in that one. And he's had these kind of moments where he's gone against really tough guys. But for the most part, he had always fallen short until he started to put a string together where he'd be Roberto Coco, Alexander Setsarenko, which is really solid, and then the big surprise for me was Artur Kashinko. You can make the argument that Kashinko had earned himself a draw. Kashinko did come on and win the third round, but Karapetyan had gotten up on him nice, like well early. But outside of that, he lost the title to Mark DeBonte, who, you know, was given that opportunity to fight for the title thanks to the injury to Nicky Holtzkin. But man, it's crazy what he's done with his Glory run, and I'm glad that he's got this opportunity. He's a fighter that he's entertaining. He's going to bring a style that you want to see, and he's bringing it to the right person because Johan Kangulo can fight. And Kangulo is a guy who, of course, he, like a couple other people on this card, just got through fighting, and for Glory just last month. And despite coming up short in the Milan card to Kareem Gaji, he was game. Like, he was there, combination kicks. He kept it smooth. He's a good, hard kickboxer. Been training in Holland. He's been training at Mike's gym. Got a victory over Cedric Dombey earlier this year in France. I thought Dombey was going to pull off the upset. That was the second time they had fought. But he got that victory. Entertaining style. Got the came up short against Kareem Gaji. And now he's got another opportunity against Karapetyan. I am excited to see these guys go. Like, I really do believe that they are a top-notch fight. I am not going to say there's going to be a KO in this fight, but both guys have that potential. Kangulo more has the opportunity to get a KO over Karapetyan, but I think that this is going to be an all-action fight that could be. It's the kind of fight that once you get to it on the card, you're like, that was fight of the night, you know, before you had even seen anything. They're that well matched. So I'm really excited about this one. I'm actually leaning towards Kangulo to get the victory. Johan Kangulo, I think he's a little bit stronger. Combinations. Karapetyan's got the better resume. Can definitely outpoint him. I just like the strength. I think Kangulo throws with enough heat, he could score down in this fight. I've got him edging out this kickboxing battle. But I do think it's going to be fight of the night type stuff. And another fight that some would consider a upset, I would not, but I definitely think that Daniel Yunga is going to beat Murad Buzidi. Murad Buzidi has looked fantastic as a light heavyweight fighter. Heavyweight, his results have been inconsistent, but he's tough. He's got a victory over Errol Zimmerman, but Errol Zimmerman was kind of injured or cut on one of his maneuvers, and that's what got Buzidi the victory. And then after Buzidi got that win, they met again, and Errol Zimmerman won the second bout. And then Buzidi's got, you know, matches with Badahari, and he's gone in there and he's gone against some of the best. He is probably, I would be surprised if in the last, 5 years, somebody's got more fights than Buzidi, because, I mean, I think he's fought for them. Let me even check now. They've got him on record for fighting for them 9 times. And he's coming off his best streak. He's got a victory over Philip Verlinden, which is just awesome. That is just, that kickboxing victory is his best, most notable win to date for their brand. Now, he's been for them for a while, or been with them. I've got it since Glory 2, where he lost to Gokhan Saki. Then he lost to Daniel Gita after that. He's got a win over Peter Arts, Fabiano Cyclone. He lost to Daniel Yunga before in the Glory tournament. That's why I'm leaning towards, if he lost to Buzidi, or if Buzidi lost to Yunga at his best weight, which I think Murad Buzidi's best weight is at the light heavyweight weight class that they have, the 93 kgs. If he lost to Daniel Yunga there, with them being bigger, I still think the volume of Daniel Yunga wins the fight. Daniel Yunga, you know, is coming off of what I would say is his best, most entertaining. He's always been an entertaining fight, but I really, really enjoyed the fight with Vakhadov. I see him being a career fighter and taking this fight right away, he's an injury replacement. Him jumping in here and saying, I'm ready to go, just shows his skill level, shows how ready he is to be a full-time kickboxer, and just shows his talent. Like, he doesn't need the big break. He wants to be on an 9-fight a year schedule as a kickboxer. Good stuff by Younger jumping in here. I've got him beating Murad Buzidi. Next fight I'm going to talk about is the one of the there's three guys in the card. I was like, not so sure what I think about these. We start off with the light heavyweight bout between Fred Sicking and Zinedine Humor Lane. Lane and Sicking are guys who have fought some of the best guys in the world and come up short. Lane has got fights where he was stopped by Jerome LeBanner, lost a decision to Alexei Ignashov. He was stopped by Bogdan Stoica. And then Sicking is a guy who, Radon Caro. He fought a title fight, I'll look that up right now. For Real Fighters, he fought a world title fight, decently entertaining fight, but he's got the fight where he lost to Radon Caro. He was stopped by Andrei Stoica, so there goes the Stoica kind of, you know, connection coming in. He actually fought both Stoicas, fought Bogdan Stoica as well. Luis Tavares, another really good fight. He has gotten in there and fought some of the best guys in the world, but in most of these fights, he's come up short. So we've got pretty much a matchup of guys who go out and test themselves against, you know, solid light heavyweight opposition. And in some cases, cruiserweight opposition. Just kind of depends on what the weight class is of that organization that they fight for. They put in good efforts, but they've come up short in those efforts. So you've got two guys who've come up short in a lot of those fighting opportunities, and here they are competing against each other. And I'm going to lean towards the combination and kicks of Fred Sicking. I think that he's got a more aggressive style, a style that's going to score better for the Dutch judging. I think Zinedine is a tough guy, but sometimes he can be inconsistent in his offense. Even when he's having success, he can have like these gaps where he's not throwing as much. So despite the fact that I really truly believe that this is one of the better matched fights on this card, despite the fact that the winner, I don't see them being a significant player in the light heavyweight division in the world, because it's just it's a growing division that's got some really tough guys, and it's actually got more intrigue than the heavyweight division, which is something that I never thought I'd ever say. And that's mostly because the light heavyweights used to fight at heavyweight, you know, back when I was coming up, you know. So the Martin Holmes were fighting up in competition, like he was not a big guy, he was 217 pounds, and he's fighting the super heavyweights. And Ernesto Hoost was in the 190s when he first started fighting the Arts and LeBanners of the world, and then he moved up in weight over the years. So I got Sicking winning this battle of a well-matched fight, but it's the one that I was like, are you kind of on the outside of being glory level? The guys who you lost to, those are the names that I'm expecting to see. You know, as I mentioned before, I should be seeing, you know, some Bogdan Stoica, some Andrei Stoica on a regular basis, some Radon Caro, even though he's really committed to, I don't know if he's committed, I don't know what his contract says, but he fights for Super Combat all the time, so, but we'll see, time will tell on that one, but I am excited that this should be an entertaining kickboxing bout. We'll see what these guys do moving forward. Next fight in the card is a fight that I think is on this card for KO purposes, period. Errol Zimmerman is going to KO Thomas Veneste. Thomas Veneste is a guy who I've watched. First of all, if you lose if you get stopped by Bryce Gideon, who is known for having decent low kick endurance, but known for winning decisions, not known for really stopping guys, and he like put on a clinic where he just scored a lot of body kicks and then snuck the head kick in and stopped Veneste. Veneste, I've watched him a couple times on Super Combat. He's lost his step-up opportunities. He's slow. He does some techniques here and there, but he's hittable. Errol Zimmerman's going to stop him. I cannot see Errol Zimmerman. It'll be strange for me to not see Errol Zimmerman win by KO. Zimmerman was a guy who, you know, won a tournament, got the opportunity to fight for the title earlier this year against Rico Verheeren. He was injured. I want to say that was in February. After he fought Rico, he was injured. Rico was up, but he got injured in the second round, and he was trying to stand, but he was just wasn't happening. After that, he said he was going to take a break, said he was going to boxing. He went back, started training. He's kickboxing again. I'm happy that Errol Zimmerman is kickboxing. It's so crazy to watch him grow up. Because when you first saw him come on the scene, he used to crack jokes about everybody was old, and he is, you know, known for being at the time one of the bigger womanizers, and just he had a different type of lifestyle. And now he's growing up and he's maturing, and his decision making's different, and he just everything about listening to him talk and do interviews is just all different. So it's really, really crazy that he's had such a long year. But this will be the second fight for Glory, and I think he wins by KO to finish out the Super Fight Series card. We go into the main card, the card that you're going to see here in the States. If you have the ESPN channels, it will be live on ESPN3 on Friday, and it will be played on delay on ESPN2 on Sunday night. And I think that's 8 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central time for those of us in the States. The people in Europe have got different providers, so I do not have those for you. Please forgive me. I do not know off the top of my head what your television providers are, but I'm assuming that's usually going to play. If it's playing live anywhere, it'd be on Eurosport, but I don't think that they'd play it live. I think that they would play it on delay, but we'll see. We go ahead and go into this card. First of all, we go into the tournament, the featherweight tournament. Featherweight is a division that they got to figure some stuff out with. The champion, Sahira Amanchuk, is a talented, talented kid. Coming off a fight that wasn't the most entertaining fight in the world, but he is your champion. Outside of him, you don't have a stable of guys who people really, really want to see. I was saying it with last week's K1 card. The K1 roster of athletes that they have are really talented and intriguing fighters that match up well with each other, and I would take them to beat most of these guys. I would take, Kufertex. I would take, of course, Masaki Nori. I would take that grouping of fighters to beat most of the guys that they have on the Glory roster. But most importantly, they've been so consistent with giving fights to those guys that we can follow the K1 scene a little bit better. You know, we know that Philip Minoru just got through, you know, getting stopped by Kufertex. We know that when Soto was defeated by Masaki Nori positioned himself to be the next person in line. Masaru Klunder still winning. I could see him getting the opportunity, but he lost to Minoru Philip. So it's like the picture is a lot clearer. Mustafa Mirani hasn't fought for them since losing the title in a, you know, closer fight, but I definitely thought the right person won. He has not fought for them since the Varga loss in Dubai. Since then, he just got through fighting in China where he was stopped. He was hit. He was hurt pretty good, but he's moving okay as far as his faculties go. But a cut caused him to lose, you know, just a few weeks ago. So I'm surprised that I wonder how they trained to prepare him for this if he healed up from the cut that fast. He is, and it was at a bigger weight class, so he's not going to have to do a big cut twice, but he is going against a guy who he's fought before in Chaya Ben Lim, and it was an all-action kickboxing affair. Amrani, it's simple. He just has to stay with his combinations and kicks and move just enough to not get hit back. He's going to get hit. He's going to get in exchanges, but if he can lower the number of times his opponent's able to return offense, he'll be in good shape because he throws heat. He throws great combinations. He bites down his mouthpiece. He has no problem going to war with anybody. The only problem for him is sometimes he gets himself out of position. He takes breaks at weird times. He gets hit at weird angles only because he kind of stops his motion. The way he takes damage sometimes, he makes shots look like they affected him worse than they did. You take the, you know, epic fight that he had with Muhammad Kamal. And in the Kamal fight, I thought there were moments where Amrani did fine, kickbox fine, but then he'd have moments where he'd have this lapse where he put his hands down and he moved backwards, and Kamal would hit him while he was leaning, and it just made the shot look way worse than it was. Chad Ben Lim, doing his thing over in Korea for a long time, K1 vet at a higher weight class, so he's always been strong. I wanted to lean towards Lim getting the victory again, but I am actually going to go Amrani this time. I think that his style, the fact that the Moroccan fan base is going to be up in there, you know, cheering their heads off. I think that he gets a victory. I don't know if extra rounds needed, but I wouldn't be surprised. But I think Mustafa Mirani wins in a very, very epic battle. Then we have the weird case of Shane Oblonsky, who continues to, you know, perform well, and he's going to go against McCall York. York is a guy who I think this is similar to me as the Thomas Adamopoulos fight for Oblonsky in terms of the tools that he brings into play, being a little bit taller, a little bit slicker. His kickboxing is fine, but he's slick with his offense too. So it's not just a combination kick guy. There's tempo changes and angles that he's able to produce offense in. It's a different look that he brings to the table. I think that he is going to beat York. I think he's going to get a decision over him after three rounds. I think York is just, I feel like he's a small guy who gets into a lot of battles, who's very hittable, and I just think Oblonsky is just slick enough to stay out a lot of that stuff. And then in the tournament finals, man, I want to lean towards Oblonsky winning this thing. I really, really do. But I just think that if Amrani can hold his pace, his tempo, for just two of those three rounds, I think that he can get a decision. How much damage he takes into play, and the fact that he might get injured, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Amrani, you know, especially since he fought a few weeks ago, wins the first fight and can't compete in the next fight and they bring Lim back. Wouldn't be surprised at all if that happened. But I'm going to lean towards Amrani to win this tournament. I won't say that the judges will be, like, super unfair, but I think if it's close round, Amrani is going to be, and the crowd is going are going to sway the judges in one way. But it should be interesting, should be a fun tournament. Now we get to the title fights. I got Nicky Holtzkin beating Mirtho Grunhardt again. But the thing is that people shouldn't go back and watch the fight. Mirtho Grunhardt outpointed Nicky Holtzkin in their first fight. He kept getting walked down by Nicky Holtzkin, and that's kind of the thing that took it to an extra. But he would score and move away and score and move away. And Nicky Holtzkin didn't really get his offense going that time. It took a little bit while for him to get into a combination flow. I thought he scored okay in the extra round, but man, for those first three rounds, I just thought that he did a lot of walking Grunhardt down, and Grunhardt would score and move and score and move. Grunhardt's a bigger body now. Like, he's much better. He's settled into being a welterweight much better. He's always been an awesome guy with power. He's always looked to be aggressive and low, throw big hands. But I think over five rounds, Nicky Holtzkin, that volume, the low kicks are going to show up. I think he's going to be able to slow Grunhardt. I think he'll score down at some period of time in a fight. I don't know if he'll necessarily stop Grunhardt, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did. But I got Nicky Holtzkin winning and retaining his welterweight title. And the last fight I'm going to talk about, Rico Verhaeven fights Benjamin Adebuyi again. Benjamin Adebuyi had the perfect start last time. Came out, landing combinations, kicks. He couldn't have started any better. But Verhoeven, who I've had interviewed on the podcast before, on the documentary, and he talked about things. And one of the big things that Verhoeven talked about was after he lost to Semi Schultz, he said he felt like nobody could hurt him. He said, I felt like Semi was the best in the world. He said, once I got through Semi, then everything seemed easier. Everything seemed easier from that moment. So he had some moments where he got stopped by Errol Zimmerman, and he said his coach told him in back. He says, "Hey, man," he said, "we're gonna." He said I wasn't listening to my coach, and I wasn't performing the way I was supposed to. His coach says, "Hey, we're gonna work on ourselves. We're gonna get better." And he says, "When we get to the top, we're gonna stay there." And that's what the product of Rico Verhoeven's done. And despite the fact that he wasn't able to get a stoppage against Adebuyi, he dominated about as much as he possibly could. Like, he really, really had the legs hurt by Adebuyi late, pushed the pace, scored combinations. One of my favorite things is he scores through the inside leg of the rear leg, which is just super high level, that he has a combination game that gets him back there. He really scored well. And I like his kickboxing to win the day again. I'm excited to see more of him. I'm hoping next year. This year he fought three times, which isn't bad. Which isn't bad for your champion. But I'm hoping that I can get him to fight four times next year. And I want to see more, especially with them returning to focusing on the European market. I'm hoping for more opportunities for Verhoeven. And a guy who's like taking care of a family, I wouldn't be surprised if he wants to fight four times a year. You know, because even if you made, I don't know, $50,000 US every fight, you're doing pretty good if you fight four times a year. I don't know how much they make, so I'm just saying you're fighting pretty good if you make that much. So we'll see what happens moving down the road. I think Adebuyi, it depends on his ability to check kicks and his ability to not look for that stoppage, even though he's got the power to get that stoppage. But, man, I'm curious to what his adjustments are going to be. Is he going to play a combination kick game a little bit longer? And he's had some fights where he struggled with that style. People can make the argument that Hezdi-Hegas was able to get a victory over him, even though Adebuyi got the decision. I'm curious to what adjustments he makes. It really is a good card, really is a good fight. So that's my glory breakdown. I want to thank everybody for listening. I will do my best to. I've got a busy week. I've got fights all this weekend to, you know, that I'm working corners because, of course, my job as a coach is how I pay my bills. So I've got that going on. And then, of course, I've got a cornering a guy in Vegas next week. So thanks, everybody, for listening. God bless, and definitely be safe out there. Love them one another. Even from the last time we spoke, there's another mass shooting going on here in the States. It's a scary world right now. So definitely loving each other more. Enjoy the combat sports. Really enjoy these athletes and watch the fights. Support these athletes. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Peace.